Smith.
So as we talked about yesterday, some 58 catering workers, CWA members, of the 11,000 workers who are right now fighting for better wages, hours, and conditions, the people who supply the meals to the airlines, these folks who work for LSG Sky Chefs, were 58 arrested. There were hundreds out in Fort Worth the other day, as we talked about. You know, $370 fine for each of the people arrested. And you go, really? This is what we're criminalizing protests. But again, we're seeing finally people speaking up to what's been going on. I look at this GE thing that we've been talking about. I look at what's going on down in Kentucky. There's got to be a point at which we say enough. And the airline industry has been one of those places that, you know, the CEO class has really just hammered on over the last couple of generations, stealing pensions, destroying working conditions. I'm here to share some thoughts on what we're seeing in our airline industry. I've asked William McGee to come talk with us. He's the author of Attention All Passengers. William, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks very much for having me on, Rick.
So, you know, I look at this unrest as we speak. You look at these chefs who are making less than $11 an hour, providing meals for all of the passengers on these planes in an industry that makes billions of dollars. It just seems, again, the wealth class of this country doing wildly well. Everybody else, not so much.
Well, I think the airline industry is the perfect microcosm of all of the larger ills that you're talking about with America. That's why I wrote Attention All Passengers a couple of years ago. And in fact, the working title before we settled on Attention All Passengers, the working title while I was researching the book was A Mad Race to the Bottom, because that's what airline cost cutting has been all about over the last 25 years or so, but particularly after 9/11.
Yeah. I remember, do you remember the Miracle on the Hudson?
Oh, sure, very well.
With Captain Sullenberger. I remember him going to Congress and testifying, and I'm sure you remember the testimony as well. When he started talking about what the airline industry has done to his profession, you know, he was a hero, and they put him up on a pedestal, and everybody loved him. As soon as he started talking about how the pilots were getting screwed, and the working conditions were getting worse, and the wages were getting worse, and the pensions were being stolen, boy, we didn't hear from him for a while, did we?
No, we didn't. He was kind enough to give me an endorsement on the back of my book. But, you know, it's funny you bring him up because that was 10 years ago. And, of course, the airline that he was flying for that day doesn't exist anymore, right? U.S. Airways. That was part of the problem with all of this is the mega mergers that we've seen in recent years. You know, we're down to just American, United, and Delta as the big major legacy hub-and-spoke airlines. And then you have Southwest in there. But, you know, it wasn't that long ago. We had Continental, Northwest, U.S. Airways, you know, TWA, Pan Am, Eastern, on and on and on. That's a big part of all this. That consolidation has hurt consumers and it's hurt workers. And it's a trend that we continue to see, this cost cutting. And what you've been talking about with the catering workers in recent days, what struck me about this is they sort of eliminated the middleman. You know, they realized that protesting the outsourced companies that provide the catering will only get you so far. So they went directly to the airlines.
Right.
And I think it's the smart thing to do, quite frankly, because with all of this outsourcing, what people don't realize is it's not that an airline employee loses a job to an outsourced employee, because that outsourced employee is being exploited too. And in the airline industry, that's very often overseas, particularly with maintenance. That's what a big part of my book is about.
Yeah, I wanted to get into that because, you know, I remember the first time I heard that, you know, we were sending our big jumbo jets at the time, and we were sending them to Ethiopia. And I'm going, why are we sending our jets to Ethiopia to be repaired when we've got perfectly good people to do that right here? And it was like, duh, of course, you can pay pennies on the dollar, and you don't have any regulatory oversight, and you don't have anybody to really act as a check or a balance. It seems like, you know, the capitalist dream.
Well, it is. If you're an airline executive, then you're only concerned about the cost. But, you know, I defy anyone who isn't biased on this issue, who doesn't have a financial stake, to say that the aircraft maintenance work currently being done on U.S. carriers that is being done in El Salvador and Brazil and Mexico and China and Singapore is as good or better than the work that is done in-house by airline employees You know, there's two sets of rules. The FAA swears there's only one set of rules for overseeing maintenance, but in fact, the reality is there's two sets of rules, because very often when the work is done outside the United States, the people doing the work aren't even technically mechanics. They're technicians. They're not licensed. They often are not screened for security, certainly not to U.S. standards. They don't undergo background checks in terms of alcohol and drug screening, that type of thing. It's really two sets of rules. And it's, you know, eventually this is not just a labor issue. Eventually this becomes a consumer issue, because it affects all of us. It affects safety.
No, absolutely. I fear that the only time anybody pays attention to this stuff is when birds start falling out of the sky.
Well, you know, there's an expression that is used in the industry. I worked in the airline industry myself for 7 years in flight operations. I'm an FAA licensed dispatcher. And there's an expression that's used by airline employees and by FAA employees to refer to the FAA, to the Federal Aviation Administration, as the tombstone agency. And that name has come, and unfortunately, it's accurate. I don't take no pleasure in saying that. But the record shows that the FAA often only acts after there's a fatality.
Right.
And that, you know, regulations are written in blood is the expression that's used.
No, I think a perfect example of that is what we're seeing with Boeing right now.
No question. There's no question. I mean, the more we learn about this, the more we see that, you know, both Boeing and the FAA knew more than, you know, than we first realized back in March. You know, the first aircraft crashed in October or November, and then we had the second, fatal crash in March. Remember, this is a brand new aircraft type, right? The 737 MAX. Both of those planes are brand new. Now we're hearing that, you know, there was much more that was known that wasn't conveyed properly to the airline.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I read, and I'm sure you know more about this than I do, but one of the things I found, you know, really incredulous was the fact that the FAA and the regulators had inspected the inflatable ladder that the slide that comes out of the plane. They'd inspected the life rafts, they inspected all that stuff, but they didn't know that there was new software on the plane.
Well, you're right. And it's just, you know, it's incredulous. But, you know, I have to say to you that for those of us who have been following this industry, working in it, writing about it, advocating about it, I've been around this industry for more than 30 years now. The fact is, we were not surprised by anything that happened with the Boeing MAX. It's a sad thing to say, but it's true. The FAA, you know, has abdicated its responsibility for oversight in many cases to the airlines and to Boeing. And so that's why, you know, I wrote the white paper on maintenance outsourcing that I recently shared with you, it was distributed by the Transport Workers Union representing mechanics at American Airlines. What we've seen is that, you know, there have been rules in place, in some cases going back all the way to 1930, tariff acts and cool country of origin labeling. I bought a bag of shrimp in the grocery store last week, and it said it's a product of India. You buy clothing, textiles, automobiles, I mean, cars, you know, there's mandatory labeling. We believe that there should be mandatory labeling for where your aircraft was serviced, that if you're booking a flight and, you know, you're booking a certain aircraft type on a certain airline, you should know that the last major maintenance was done in El Salvador or done in Brazil or done in Singapore or China. Of course, the airline industry, you know, this horrifies them to have more transparency. The fact is, you know, a great many consumers just have no idea that work on U.S. airlines, again, we're stressing, these are U.S. airlines, not foreign airlines, is now, you know, in large measure done outside the U.S.
No, I look at this, and again, you know, I remember a couple years ago we were fighting the Norwegian flag of convenience changes that were being made for stewardesses and flight crews, and you know, you go, this globalization is really, you know, I think after all these years, we can now look at globalization in the way that it's been rammed down our throats as simply just a race to the bottom, a destruction of not just, you know, the standard of living that we've enjoyed in this country for a while, but also the ability to have any say in anything that happens in our country, and pretty much giving these companies such outweighted power, and so much so that it's even more powerful than our government.
Well, no question. And, you know, what's really, I mean, takes a tremendous amount of chutzpah is that the CEOs of the same airlines we're talking about, American, United, and Delta, have been crying to President Trump and Congress and anyone who will listen for years that they basically want to exclude certain foreign carriers, including carriers from the Middle East, from the Gulf states, to operate in the United States because they say that that's going to impinge on U.S. jobs. At the very same time, that they are laying off mechanics in the United States and sending airplanes to Brazil and overseas. It's extraordinary. I mean, it takes a certain type of personality to be able to do that.
Yeah, and there's no defense from this administration. And in fact, you know, I just saw the courts recently, and you can, I'm sure, talk about this better than I can. The courts recently basically blamed the mechanics for pointing out that there are things wrong, and claiming that by doing their job of saying, hey, we need to fix this stuff, that they were actually impeding the airline's ability to function. And guests basically ruling against them.
Well, yeah, I can't, you know, I'm not privy to the specifics of what went on there. Some of that stuff is sealed, but I can tell you that, I mean, from my perspective, if a court is going to rule that mechanics are, you know, intentionally grounding airplanes, then let's see the evidence that work wasn't necessary. The fact is, you know, if the Federal Aviation Regulations, the rules that mechanics adhere to, require work to be done, then it needs to be done. I mean, it's really an extraordinary thing when you step back and you think about it. You say, wait, you're saying that they're grounding aircraft to fix them for legitimate maintenance reasons. How is that a slowdown? That's in the best interest of passengers and crew and everyone else. Yeah. In the best interest of all of us.
Yeah, I want to see the judge get on that plane.
Well, I mean, you raise a great point.
No, I want to see him get on that plane and take that trip.
So, you know, as I say, Rick, this is just this is a trend line that's been going on for some time, and it's only getting worse.
So what do we do about this?
Well, I firmly believe we need more education, because I can just tell you anecdotally, when I'm at a party or a wedding or something, and start talking to people, oh, what do? I wrote a book, this and that. We start talking about this. I have to tell you that a lot of times people think I'm a liar. You know, of course, I'm not lying about these issues, but they say, oh, you must be wrong. No. Latin American carriers get serviced in El Salvador and Brazil, but not U.S. carriers. No, you're wrong. You know, the fact is, people are just incredulous. They don't understand that they and their loved ones, we're talking about American aircraft, excuse me, U.S. aircraft. We're saying that, you know, this work, it was done for decades, for the better part of the 20th century. It was done in-house in the United States by mechanics who were licensed by the FAA, who went through background checks for security, went through drug and alcohol screening. I worked for Pan Am for several years. You know, when major maintenance work had to be done, you know, the airplanes are brought into JFK Airport in New York, and that's where, you know, a team of 10 licensed mechanics, you know, changed an engine or did some work. Now, it's likely that the same type of engine change is done in El Salvador or Brazil or wherever, and maybe 8 or 9 of those people doing the work are not licensed. But one person, designated by the airline and approved by the FAA, signs off on the logbook, and the FAA, I've had senior executives in the FAA look me right in the eye and say, there's no difference in those two models. I mean, just think about that a moment. 10 licensed people or 9 unlicensed people and 1 licensed person, that's the same as far as the FAA is concerned. I think that's mind-blowing to the average passenger. Yeah. And so, you know, when you say, what can we do about it, I really think education is the key, because, you know, unfortunately, we have not seen, you know, a proper response from the FAA or enough of a response from Congress. There are those in Congress that are speaking up about this, and that's great, but there just hasn't been a groundswell. And, you know, you said it before. It's a terrible thing to have to say, that it takes, you know, it takes blood. Look, we wouldn't be talking about these problems on the Boeing 737 MAX if they had been noticed, but they hadn't led to fatalities. It would not be front page news. But, you know, it took those 2 fatal accidents to ground that plane. And the story with maintenance outsourcing, it's the same type of thing. You know, those who are experts in the front lines, they keep telling me, you know, they cross their fingers now.
Yeah, I mean, this goes against everything that we've been told for the last 30 years, that we don't need regulations, William. We don't need those job-killing regulations, because companies will do what's in their best interest. They don't want to get sued and spend hundreds of millions of dollars on lawsuits. They'll do the right thing. Trust them.
I have to tell you, Rick, you're setting me up, because in the prologue to Attention All Passengers, I addressed that very thing. I talked about people who, you know, who live by that credo, and maybe they're academics, or maybe they're, you know, consultants or journalists, and they, you know, they preach the free market. Let me tell you, you know, all you have to do is take the thing that you love the most in this world, whether it's a person or a pet or whatever it is, strap them into a pressurized tube, hurdle them across the troposphere at 35,000 feet, and then tell me that it doesn't matter to you whether or not the work was done by a licensed mechanic and whether or not the FAA had proper oversight. That's the big problem here, is the FAA is not providing the same level of oversight overseas. And the frontline FAA inspectors, many of them I've spoken to, dozens in New York, and, you know, and now the planes are in San Salvador, and they're in Brazil, and they're all over the world. They're in China. They can't get there. They can't do their job. So, you know, this isn't some sort of little, you know, esoteric mind game. Let's talk about the you know, the free market. I'll tell you something. The airline industry has a way of cutting across blue and red lines in that way. Because when you talk about airline safety, it's such a visceral thing, it's such a gut-level thing, that suddenly those philosophies go out the window. And people say, no, no, I think I'd much rather have a good, certified, licensed mechanic, you know, doing this work. And no, it's not about the free market and who can do the lowest bid.
Yeah, you know, look, you know, I go across some bridges, and I often think of, you know, I forget the guy who said it on the space shuttle, who said, you know, lowest bid got the contract.
Right, exactly.
You know, I worry about that. But here again, I mean, you know, and kind of wrap this up, I mean, because this is the, in my view, the epitome of bad governance. This is, you know, you have the Republican mantra of, you know, government can't or shouldn't do anything. This is what you get at the end of that road when you don't believe in regulations and you don't believe in oversight and you don't have a cop on the beat.
Well, you know, there's a term that's used in the airline industry. It's not a pretty term, but it's called a smoking hole. And that's what we have seen, unfortunately, as terrible as that is to contemplate. You know, it can end in a smoking hole. Now, this is what the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, is what Ralph Nader calls a captured agency, and that is captured by lobbyists, right? And so, you know, again, I know that the Boeing MAX, you know, because Boeing has such a stellar reputation, and the airline industry itself has had, you know, a very good safety record in recent years. But you can't rest on those laurels. You can't just say, well, it's going to continue that way. When you chip away like this and you put cost first. And, you know, this is a textbook captured regulatory, you know, agency, the FAA. It responds, you know, not to the best interests of us, the taxpayers, the flying public, but to the industry. And this is not me throwing mud. This is anyone that studies this industry and has looked at it in recent years. Time after time after time, the FAA has been aware of situations and has failed to act. And then suddenly there's a fatality and they act almost immediately.
And while I'm really harsh on this administration, it's not solely this administration, although I would argue they're worse than the others. But you look at the regulatory agencies across the board, be it OSHA, MSHA, the FAA, any of these, the FDA, you know, EPA, any of them, they've all been seemed to be weaponized in the way to benefit corporate America and against we the people.
Well, Rick, I have to tell you, I mean, you know, my own personal views on all of these issues have changed since I really started studying this. Since I've been studying maintenance outsourcing, it's been across four administrations, right? So that's, you know, Clinton, Bush, Obama, Trump. That's Democrat, Republican, Democrat, Republican. These are systemic problems. It doesn't matter who's in the White House in the last 20 years. It really doesn't. I mean that sincerely. This is, you know, we're talking about such levels of money. But this isn't a blue and red thing. This isn't a political thing in that way. We're talking about so much lobbying money that, you know, the industry dictates to the agency, well, you know, this is what we'd like to do. We see that with Boeing. I mean, who was signing off on that work? Designees. That's an official program from the FAA. Well, who are the designees? Well, they're paid by Boeing. And no one can say that's not a conflict of interest.
No, you're absolutely right. And then you have the other problem of the swinging door, where you've got regulators who go into industry and back and forth. And, you know, look, we've got a mine, a former coal baron as the head of the Mine Health Safe and Healthy Administration. Right. I mean, it doesn't get any worse than that.
Earlier this week, the new FAA administrator was sworn in. This has been a post that's been empty for most of this administration. He's been an acting administrator. And the new administrator was sworn in, and it's, you know, a former airline employee, which is sort of standard for that, you know, for that post. We've seen quite a few of those.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of this is one of these horror stories that I hope does not end in people losing their lives and that we get Congress to act. So last question I've got for you, you know, what do we do tomorrow? I mean, because what's the action out of this? I mean, it's all horrible. It's all bad. What's the action to improve it?
Well, there are several of us on the consumer side, consumer advocates, who are working with the Transport Workers Union on organizing a hearing in Washington in October so sort of a public hearing and bringing in lawmakers, bringing in journalists, bringing in as many people as possible to put this on people's radar for those that are not aware of it. I have to tell you, I don't think I've ever discussed this at length with someone and then they sort of shrug and say, oh, well, what's the big deal? When people hear about it, you know, I'm talking about, you know, people that are savvy and read the news and they think they're up on things. They're unaware of this. It's a big black hole.
Yeah.
And, you know, you don't want it to be headline news with triple digits of fatalities in order to get on people's, you know, on people's wavelengths there.
No, and I certainly don't want to be part of that headline.
No.
So there is that. But, Bill, I appreciate the time of the book. I hope people will take a look at Attention All Passengers. We'll make sure we get links out on how people can pick that up. Well worth the read. I appreciate you taking time for us. Love to have you come back as this continues.
Absolutely, Rick. I'd be happy to. Thank you very much.
Good stuff. Appreciate it. William McGee, author of Attention All Passengers. Like it. I hope you'll take a look at it. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.